Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a weekly program of conversations with regional and national writers from North State Public Radio. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
Perhaps you were born in the North State, or maybe you live here because you choose to. Author Linda Krill moved to Chico in 2022 because of how friendly and welcome she found the people here. But after only 2 months in Chico, she was diagnosed with cancer for a third time. Before her own diagnosis, she had cared for her husband through terminal cancer. Linda Krill was a professional speaker and consultant and has served as a keynote speaker at national cancer events. She's taught 3 courses for the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, and the Ollie Writers Group inspired her to write a book that shows an insider's view of how to support someone with cancer. Sooner or later, we can all expect to be faced with the question of what to do, what to or not to do or say. And Linda Krill's book answers that question. The title of her book is Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo and Outsider's Guide for Support. Linda Krill, welcome.
Good to be here with you and your listeners.
Now, your book has 2 parts, one because of your own experiences, but I think listeners are thinking, what is there something I should do or shouldn't do or say? So I'd like to really start with your suggestions on cancer etiquette. And I think that's not a word that people would expect. Etiquette? There's etiquette involved with cancer?
It's common among anybody who's had cancer to have several things that are constantly said and done that are inconvenient. And we know the person was meaning to be supportive. And so I thought, why not put a section in here? And like with all etiquette, there are no hard rules. So I made guidelines to help people think what is right and what is wrong. And there's no one rule.
Even in my experience, there's no one word. We have this one word, cancer. But my goodness, it is so variable, and people don't always realize that, I think. Is that been your experience?
Yes, and people don't realize, for instance, with breast cancer, there's 127 different kinds of breast cancer, and a similarly large number of kinds for any other part of your body. So when you've had an experience and you think you know something about it, it can be very different. I often say it's like a virus. If you have a cold, that's a virus. But also, if you have something that is much more serious, like COVID that we went to, or long-term COVID, it's a whole different healing cycle. And so all viruses aren't the same, and all cancers aren't the same.
My guest is Linda Krill, and her book's title is Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo and Outsider's Guide for Support. So there are so many choices that have to be made if you or a family member or a friend is diagnosed with cancer. But the etiquette is something that I just really, even though I knew what the truth of what you were saying, I think people, it wouldn't hurt to remind people, even if they know some of these guidelines that you mentioned. So what's the first thing that you think is important?
I think that listening is very important to find out where that person is. If you recall when you've been sick with a virus, some days you're ready to talk about it and want sympathy, and other days you don't. So listening is our first key for how to deal with the etiquette question.
And so many times people have the best of intentions, but they are less of a listener than a talker, and they want to talk about their own experience. Oh, well, my nephew had cancer, and they have good intentions wanting to say, so I sympathize with you, but you say no, that you don't listen, you don't be the talker, you say be a good listener.
You know, I've taught in the corporate world communication skills, and one of the first things we do, especially with small talk, is as we hear somebody went on vacation to someplace, or we hear that somebody is having a baby, we immediately go to our own internal stories and say, what do I know about that? And in conversation, we share our stories with theirs. So it's natural when you hear somebody has cancer to immediately think, what are my cancer experiences, and want to share them. But what we don't realize is if I'm at a social event, like when my husband was first diagnosed with cancer, I spent the whole evening listening to 8 other people's stories about cancer. And I'm living with cancer 24/7. And so I don't need that story. And so I would smile and be polite, because that's what we do in conversation. But I would leave exhausted from having here. And for how can I be sympathetic about your story, about your brother or your neighbor?
You know, Linda, I think this applies not just to the topic of cancer, but just in generally when you're socializing with people and you say, this number one, be a good listener. This will be your greatest guide for what to say or not say. Allow them to tell or not tell their story in their own way. While listening, feel free to ask questions to clarify what they've expressed, but don't jump in with your own stories or offer advice.
Yes, that's so critical. And part of why we're jumping in with our own stories is we're still processing them. And it's not fair to make that story be processed by somebody who's dealing with cancer. And often we're sharing our story with somebody that's just been newly diagnosed, and they are still dealing with all of the ramifications, and they don't know yet what all their choices are going to be or what their future looks like. So you're talking to a person that cancer is not an easy subject.
Well, I'm glad you put that as number one. I think that's something we could apply to our whole life. Then guideline number two, what do you all suggest then as your second point?
Well, I talked about respecting a person's privacy. My husband, for instance, didn't want to tell anybody. And I said, why not, honey? Why don't you want others to know? And he says, because as soon as they know, that's all I become to them. I become cancer. I quit being Bill. And a lot of people aren't ready to share their story. And people will be offended, like when they hear from a friend that somebody has cancer. Oh, she didn't tell me, or he didn't tell me. And when we see the person, it's even worse, because we immediately go to another reflex. Just as I say, we go to our cancer stories first to share. The second thing we go is, give me an update. And our updates aren't always good news. And they aren't always things that we're ready to share. And so the fact that someone says, as soon as they know you have cancer, the first thing they want to say to you, and this goes for your family and the caregivers, is when we see them, how's your dad, or how's your wife, or how's your husband? So one of the second reasons I give as a guideline is respect a person's privacy about their health. And please remember, updates can go on for years for some people and for a lifetime. So please remember, the person is still the person, and they're not cancer.
And they're not limited by a definition of themselves as a cancer patient.
Exactly.
So your third guideline, don't feel a need to fill in silent spaces in conversations.
It's interesting. And this comes like when you meet them in public and you're introduced. This is when you go to visit them in their home or in the hospital, is we have to get comfortable with silences. I'm a widow, and one of the things that often happens in public is people will say, oh, meet this other person. They're also a widow. And we widows often look at each other and smile but say nothing, because we're comfortable with there are no words that need to be said. And so I'm saying, with a cancer person, if they're talking to you about how they are doing, and there's pauses in the conversation, allow the pauses.
Do you know a fond memory I have? A young staffer that I worked with said, I don't know what to say. I don't have any words. He gave me a hug. And I thought, now there's, I was so touched by that.
We're looking for words that will make their journey easier. And as soon as we realize what they're facing is so overwhelming for some people, there aren't a sentence that is the right thing to have said. So when we take that burden off of ourselves of having to say the right thing, your friend's conversation was perfect. I want to say something, but I don't know. Yeah. But I'm here.
Exactly. And so that's guideline number three is don't feel a need to fill in silent spaces in conversations. And I always appreciate when somebody can come sit, say, next to the hospital bed and just sit there and be with that person.
Well, I've often said, if you're going to the hospital, take something to do. And the fact that we all carry cell phones is great these days, because if that person needs to doze off to sleep, you can just pick up your phone and start reading something or doing something, but you're present, you know, or there. And I'm a knitter, so I often
I remember that in your book, yes.
I often take my knitting with me, because that looks like I'm busy doing something. And that allows the person. Often the person we're visiting is trying very hard to be social. And this is one of the big weaknesses I have. I still think with cancer, I have to take care of my guests. And that's not unique to me. That's very common. And so that person's trying to be happier, and they're trying to respond to you, and they're trying to be there, and it may be using up all their energy. So when we can give them a break...
And knitting is so quiet.
Yeah.
You don't make any noise. Well, very little. Guideline number four. Remember, we all are more than any health issue. You've touched on this, but what else do you have to say about this?
Well, this is a realization I came to through my... I've had breast cancer three times. And so on the third journey, I really had to come to grips with the fact that the part of me that has cancer is a very small piece of who I am. So first of all, it was for me to realize this. But with my friends, as I said, don't jump immediately to a cancer conversation. If you're out socially, and let's say you haven't been somewhere for a while, and you get the energy and you go out, having a friend greet you and say, "So nice to see you."
Instead of, "Oh, how are you doing?
How are you doing?" Yes. And I almost felt like they should be patting me on the head twice like a cute little kid and saying, "How are you?" And in a cooing voice, you know, talk to me normally, you know, and feel free. And when my husband had cancer, I actually said to my family, "Please send me happy stories." And they said, "How can I do that when you're facing what you're facing?" And I said, "I need good news from others." So don't be afraid to gently, I don't mean enthusiastically, but to gently share some things that are going on in your life that may mean something to that person.
Well, here's your fifth guideline. If they don't tell you about their cancer, don't be offended.
It's not something that we sit there like with a wedding invitation and say, "Who are my closest friends? And let me invite them to a wedding or to whatever special family event." This is very slow that we share information. And the biggest problems with this is as soon as we share it with one person, and even if they say, "I won't tell anybody else," it suddenly is out in the community.
Your sixth guideline, don't tell others about a person's cancer unless they've asked you to be their spokesperson.
The spokesperson's an important part of this, because one of the things you can offer someone is with the family. We get so tired of telling everybody. If you can say, "Would you like me to be the spokesperson and tell the family, if you want an update, come to me." But also, people are so quick to share. I said, even the person that says, "Oh, I won't tell anybody," who is my neighbor. Why did my neighborhood suddenly everyone know that I had cancer? And this is just unfortunate. We're not very good at holding secrets. So I'm also saying, please, and this goes for social media too. A friend of mine responded to me on social media and responded about my cancer. And suddenly everybody knew. Now, she had no idea that I had not told other people. But more importantly, every time I went to my Facebook page or to browser, there were advertisements for cancer being given to me, because now it's a part of my profile. So the secrecy goes further than just conversations these days. It goes from any place that you communicate with the person.
And so you say, watch out for the gossip and misinformation that can come from repeated sharing or when people fill in the blanks with their own thoughts.
Well, we use sometimes when someone says, "How are things going?" we use cancer terms. And it's amazing how little our public knows. We now know that 1 in 2 men and 1 in 3 women in their lifetime will be diagnosed with some form of cancer. Now, not all forms of cancer are super challenging. Some of these are smaller events, especially if they're caught early. But this is a whole thing that as soon as it's out there, it's communicated broadly. And so if I might just say metastasize, someone else may not know what metastasize means. Or if I say the test came back and it was positive, they don't know whether positive is good or bad. And so even though it may have been good news, it gets communicated as negative news. So one of the things I would say that's not here is we have to, as a society, start educating ourselves with basic vocabulary. But also, don't assume and don't embellish. Again, this is a reason why it's great to have a spokesperson. That spokesperson can be educated and not everyone.
My guest is Linda Krill. She's an author and speaker. The title of her book is Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo, An Outsider's Guide for Support. And we'll be back to continue our conversation after a short break. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, Chico author Linda Krill, whose book is Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo and Outsider's Guide for Support. And she has suggestions for cancer etiquette. And that's, like I say, a term I never thought we would need, etiquette. But you're also saying all these other terms related to cancer are unfamiliar to people also. And this your book can help them realize, oh, that's what that is.
I think one of the reasons why a lot of people with cancer get ghosted by friends is people are afraid they're going to say or do the wrong thing. And when I've spoken to groups that weren't cancer people, I was surprised by the number one question I get is, what don't I say or do?
Yes.
And so I know it's a universal concern, so why not address it?
Yes, that's an excellent question, I gotta say. Guideline number 7, don't assume the person with cancer knows a lot about the specifics of their cancer. I was disappointed that I think sometimes doctors are reluctant to describe the extent of the cancer.
Well, it's a dual thing. We all have strategies about how we survive bad news. And if we think of some of the things that have happened in our own lives, some people's way of handling it is to educate themselves everything they can learn about it. I'm one of those persons. If I'm told I have a cancer, I want to know what stage, what grade, what are my choices. I want to know details. Some people, the way they survive is to pretend it doesn't really exist every day. And so their way of surviving is to say to the doctor, tell me the tests I need to take, tell me the medicines I need to take, but I don't want to know the details. So it's not just whether the doctors tell us the whole truth. We all have different survival mechanisms of how we go through and deal with a diagnosis such as cancer. And so once again, this is where I said with the listening is your first rule, is we can tell by how much they seem to want to talk as to what's true.
And it seems to me that it's often the personality of the doctor as to how much detail they give. And a friend of mine said she has learned to really ask the doctor a lot of questions because she wants to know. And so that is advice that she has. Ask your doctor questions. And I realized that I had to ask the doctor, for my husband, is this stage four cancer? Because nobody had said that.
Well, one of the things I've always do is I say everybody should have a medical bag.
Uh-huh.
And in the medical bag, there should be water and there should be food and there should be something to do when you're waiting. But also inside of that is a tablet. And I start to put down every question I have. And when I go in to see the doctor, I say, I have a series of questions. Shall I wait and ask them afterwards or do you want to hear them now? And the doctors look surprised and are pleased. But often during doctor's appointments, we're uncomfortable. You know, we're not sure what we're going to hear today. We're not sure what news we're going to get. And so even though we had a question, we often forget it.
That's why I think your suggestion is such a good one, to have a tablet, write down the questions, because like you say, you're going into the doctor's office, that's a stressful situation, and all of a sudden, poof.
But what you did for your husband is what I also suggest to people with cancer. Go there with somebody else who takes notes during the meeting. And I took
I did that.
I took notes for my husband because often afterwards I would say the doctor said so-and-so, and he said, no, he didn't.
Uh-huh.
And then I could pull out the notes
and
then read the doctor's words versus how I remembered it. So if you have a friend or a family member or somebody else that you trust that can go in with you, they've never said, no, someone can't go in with me or to an appointment. And so that's a great way to walk away, even if you were told you might not remember. So this is a way to walk away with notes.
Well, one situation I found rather humorous, a friend of mine went into the doctor. And she took a friend, and when they walked out, the friend said, well, that was good news. She said, what? Because the doctor gave her a bit of bad news first. That was all she heard. She heard nothing after that. So she did not even hear the good news because she was just stuck on what the first words the doctor said.
Yeah. One of my missions has been to help people get rid of the fear and just take it a day at a time. And this is the population at large. Not every cancer. You know, when you think of 50% of all men are going to have cancer and 33% of us, it's not going to be life-threatening to everybody. And it's not going to be, it is an inconvenience, just like COVID was an inconvenience for us when we got it. But it's not going to necessarily be all the things that our imagination has caused it to be.
In fact, this friend who had cancer and didn't hear the bad news is still alive and volunteering and has a rich life. So I just think that your advice is so helpful in more than just cancer situations. So I'm appreciative of your book. Now let's get to conversation guidelines. And that continues your guidelines. For example, your guideline number 8, continue to engage with the person even if you fear saying the wrong thing.
One of the things that's very hurtful for us is we have a good friend. I had a neighbor that lived right next to me, and we had dinner together because we were both single at least 3 nights a week. And from the day I was diagnosed for the next 6 months, I didn't see her once. And years later, once our friendship resumed, she shared with me I was too afraid of what to say or do. And so she had fear to overcome. And that's okay for a day or so for her to experience that on our own. But we have to get rid of that idea that we have to be the solution for the person. Presence is often what we value most.
Well, I think also age helps because I think of things that I didn't understand when I was younger. And that with age, I realize, I understand better now. So I think that might be a factor, too, to consider.
It's very true that by the time you're over 60, most people know 5 people that have had cancer.
Oh, yeah.
And so we are more experienced on what to say and do.
And I'm sure you followed this guideline. Don't share your own cancer experiences and thoughts unless specifically asked.
You know, when I was hiking here in Chico and I was going through chemotherapy, but I was able to on some days still hike, somebody would say to me something about, yes, they've had cancer too. And I often took that advantage at that moment to say, tell me more about what you went through. And it was helpful for me to hear some things. And they may know a strategy of, you know, this kind of food I couldn't eat, but I could do this one. And often we have things we can share. But waiting after they made the first statement that I went through cancer too and not offer anything more, it allowed me to say, do I want to know more? And we often ended up in a very important conversation for me.
Oh, yeah. Remind people, my guest is Linda Krill, and her book is Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo and Outsider's Guide for Support. Now, the word chemo is in your title, and you, I think I understand that you only had chemo with the third cancer diagnosis.
That's true, yes. I had radiation with the first and nothing with the second, and the third time we immediately realized that chemo was going to be necessary. And so I went through it. I chose to put that in my title partially because we want to support others, and we all know the word chemo. And it makes most of us get these big, huge, round eyes going, oh, my gosh, chemo. And yet if you say to somebody, what is chemo? Therapy. Very few people know what it is. And so because I was going through with a cancer diagnosis here, new in town, the doctors told me, don't go out and meet people. We need you to not be sick when we have the surgery. And I had a mastectomy 3 months later. And then after the mastectomy, they said, don't go out and meet people until you're recovered. And then I thought I was done. And then they said, oh, we discovered that your kind of tumor could have metastasized, which means gone to another area of the body. You need chemotherapy. And that word scared me more than any other word. And so I was by myself, and they said, don't go out and meet people because we don't want you to get sick. Your resistance is low. And so I was sort of stuck, you know, in not knowing people here in Chico. I had plenty of friends that called me on Zoom meetings and FaceTime meetings, but I didn't have local support. So I ended up on different mornings writing because I overanalyze everything. So my writings could be how to live with no hair, you know, and I
yes,
look for it.
That was a humorous part
and that
of your
was
book.
That was a fun one to write because, you know, how do you, suddenly there's real free, I mean, you can say, I don't have hair. And to me, oh, please, it was very important to have hair. But I decided that morning, what are the advantages of not having, it's part of gratefulness, how do you do this? But I also wrote, what do we call people with cancer? And I wrote about what is the chemo experience like? And I was surprised in the Ollie writing group that people in the class, when I brought that essay or that journal entry to class for criticism, people said, I sat next to my husband during chemotherapy infusions, and I never knew what he might be thinking. Now, he might not have been thinking the way I was, but hearing somebody of what do you do for those 7 hours of infusion, and what does it feel like?
7 hours.
Well, and I want to come back to one more thing. The word chemotherapy, if you are using the medical definition, means anything that kills cancer. So every pill you take, everything you do. But chemotherapy infusion, where we infuse medicines into your body for a period of time to search out any cancer cells, that's the one that most of us know the nightmare stories of what kind of side effects and how does it affect the person.
Thank you for that explanation, that distinction. Now, somebody looking at you today would have no clue you ever went through this, Linda.
You know, I keep saying to myself, I said, you know, we don't, in the middle of what we're going through, know what the afterpiece will be like. We only are living there day by day. But it helps when we can see other people post-therapy look normal and act normal again.
Guideline, going back to your guidelines, guideline number 11, be careful not to offer unsolicited medical advice or question someone's medical decisions. And I think people do this with the best of intentions. Oh, I know a suggestion for you. I know just how you can cure this.
This comes with the stories that they know. And I was given, when my husband had cancer and I was much younger, I was given over 10 books on cancer. And I was told by people, you absolutely have to go to Mexico, and you have to go to this doctor, and you have to go to this clinic. And I was told by people, oh, you have to be doing this. And there was no respect. And so one of the things I say to somebody, are you happy with what you're, you know, with the care you're getting and whatnot? And if they say no, then you can say, what are you looking for? But to automatically assume that your experience will be their answer isn't fair. And so even like with breast cancer, giving somebody pink windshield wipers, which is what some guy wanted to do for because it was cancer month. I don't want pink windshield wipers on my car. You know, I don't want strangers.
Well, I do give people credit for having the best of intentions.
Yes.
They want you to get better and they think, oh, I've got just the advice for you,
yes.
Linda. So it's with good intentions, but
I want to go one step further.
Yeah.
In cancer support groups, there are a number of people who have been fighting cancer for years and are exhausted. And they said, I refuse to do anything more. Those people, and even if a person right up front says, I don't believe in all these therapies, I'm choosing to do this route. Please, everyone, allow them to make their own decisions without having to deal with our reactions to them.
And I respect physicians who accept the patient's decisions in that regard.
It has to be. I mean, we still are in charge of our own bodies. And if you think about how we choose to eat and how we choose to live, we are making decisions that are often not in alignment with what a medical professional would say, or even our friends.
Now, here's another phrase that people say with the best of intentions, and they learn about your condition, and they say, I know how you feel.
Oh, this is one that everyone that has had cancer wants to turn around and say to the person, no, you don't. It's again, this is one of those attempts to connect. And so the intention is a good one, but it's also asking us to recognize that person's, whatever they went through, as being our own. And that never works.
Well, would you actually say that? Because your first reaction, your internal reaction is, would have been, no, you don't.
That's most of my reaction.
But do you actually say it?
No, I don't. My whole background is to look behind a person's words for their intention. And
yes.
I realize what is so great when any of us are diagnosed is the overwhelming support we get from so many people. There are people who never felt appreciated in life, and suddenly they're overwhelmed. So we don't want to stop. Please, people, as you listen to us talking today, don't think I'm going to say or do the wrong thing. We appreciate the compassion.
Yes. But you also, going back to the fact that cancers, we have this one term for such a variety of illnesses, if I want to call them that, and you say in your book, everyone's experience with cancer is unique.
It's not only unique, but moment to moment, we feel different. One day, I wake up during chemotherapy, and I feel like, oh my God, I almost feel normal. And the next day, I can't get out of bed. And sometimes 1 hour of the day is a happy day moment, and the next is not. So to think that this is a homeostasis way that we are, come on, all of us, every day of our lives, go through a multitude of feelings.
And you add, there are too many kinds of cancer, stages of development, and treatment options for our experiences to be parallel. And each of us processes difficulties differently.
Yeah, very much so.
And then your guideline, the next one is, don't search for positives by saying, well, at least it's not blah, blah, blah. And then they fill in, at least it's not some condition or disease that you think is worse.
I think everybody who has gone through a horrendous experience has had people trying around them to make them feel grateful that it's not worse. And this is not something that is something that we should be offering other people. We can think it to ourselves, you know, I'm glad you only have this diagnosis and not something worse.
Yeah.
But again, there's a lot of conversations we should keep inside ourselves. It's not wrong to have them, but choose selectively.
Another example you give, well, at least you'll have more time away from the office, or now you'll have more time to spend with your family. That's some of the things that pops into their head, but you're suggesting, no, that's not helpful.
Definitely not.
After a break, Linda Krill and I will continue our conversation about cancer inside out. You're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm Nancy Wigman. I'm Nancy Wigman, and you're listening to Nancy's Bookshelf on North State Public Radio. I'm back with my guest, local author and cancer survivor, Linda Krill. Your next guideline, never say, everything happens for a reason.
Again, we're each looking for a reason of why someone got cancer. You know, when we hear someone got cancer, immediately we go through a whole litany of what caused it. And part of it is, if we can figure out a reason that, oh, they smoked, or oh, they only eat at McDonald's, or they only do certain things, we feel safer. And we have to realize that part of what we're doing is we're dealing with our own reactions to the word cancer.
So it's not helpful to say, well, everything happens for a reason. You got this cancer because...
Even when you ask a cancer doctor, why do I have this cancer? And a lot of us think it's hereditary, but interestingly enough, hereditary is only a very small part of a cause for cancer these days. And yet we have that belief. And it's even worse for a mother when her daughter gets breast cancer. Mm-hmm. She suddenly feels like it's my fault. I gave her the DNA. So looking for a reason, doctors will look at us and say there are so many possible causes, but we all probably get cancer quite a few number of times in our lives consistently. And our immune system goes through our bodies and say, what cells are programmed wrong? What cells are tired and old? And the immune system gets rid of these cells. So it's really not that that other people don't have cancer cells appearing in their body from time to time. It's somehow or another this particular group of cells didn't get eliminated.
My guest is Linda Krill. Her book is Cancer Inside Out. Now, this, what you bring up just now is, what was the cause? Because my husband had lung cancer. He never smoked. He ate healthy, exercised regularly. His parents both died of cancer. So that's when I thought, well, maybe it was in the genes. So, I don't have the answer, but what do you have any feelings about this?
Because there's so many different kinds of cancer. You know, like with breast cancer, only 5% of it is related to a DNA characteristic. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard with so many different kinds of cancer to say, here's the cause. There are some things that are caused by environment. My husband had mesothelioma, and that comes from asbestos. We can say asbestos was environmentally. He breathed in these the asbestos pieces, and his body couldn't get rid of it, and that caused the breakdown. So it can be so many different causes. And we all know that living here in Butte County, in a farming community, we have a higher percentage of cancer than other parts of the United States. What is the cause? We can say it could be related to agriculture, but we don't know.
Well, here's another couple of expressions that people say with all the best intentions. But you say, don't tell people, be strong, or say, you'll get through it.
We just talked about this last week at the Enlow Cancer group that, and we all said, people come up to us and they'll visit us or see us and they'll say, smile, be happy, because they don't want to see us looking unhappy. And the group was universal in saying, it takes too much energy some days to smile. Why can't I be allowed to be where I am? That takes less energy. And what most people don't realize is when you're going through cancer treatments and your body is fighting cancer, energy is one of your rarest commodities. You guard your energy. And if I have to, because I'm around other people in public, be cheerful and smile and be energetic.
And be strong.
And be strong, that takes more energy. Please just allow me to, and this goes not just for cancer, for anybody who's going through a difficult time, allow people to be where they are at.
Your next guideline, don't expect the person with cancer to educate you about the basics of cancer.
We will say to someone that asks, this is what I'm experiencing, and they'll say, what does that mean? And we then have to keep giving more and more explanation. And then we see the next person, and they say, how are you doing? And you say it, and we end up, this is what I said at the beginning, we need to learn basic words. There are four stages of cancer, from very, very small and early to stage 4, and the differences are very different. And yet, most people don't know the four stages of cancer. We might know four stages of something else that have to do with society, but we don't know this about cancer. So basic words like metastasize just means the cancer started out in one area and went to the next. And so you go, how do you know that? And most people don't realize your lung cells look different than your intestinal.
Kidney cells, for example.
Whatever. And so when you find a lung cell in the intestines, you know that it's moved from one place to the next. That's called metastasized. Now, interestingly enough, in Chinese medicine, they actually believe the fact that the body sent the cancer somewhere else is good. Mm-hmm. In other words, the area in the lung was too hot and too overwhelmed, and so it sends it to someplace else that's not as stressed out. So it's very interesting how our perspectives, you know, can change according to whether you're talking about, you know, our medicine's way of looking at things or as a Chinese way of looking at it.
That is so interesting to you contrast with another culture's view of medicine and healing, because I find that so interesting that, in fact, I happen to be in China and the woman was answering the doctor's questions, and the questions, kind of questions he was asking, I thought, I can't imagine a doctor in the United States asking those kinds of questions. But she answered without thinking about it.
Well, most people don't even think about it, but the term cancer is one we chose to represent a certain number of symptoms. You know, and that's true of whether it's Crohn's disease or whether it's diabetes. We say out of these 20 symptoms, if you have these 14, then you have this disease. We have called the names of these diseases. Other societies don't share those names.
Your next guideline, don't start your conversation with, how are you?
Oh, this is, okay, if you remember nothing else from this interview, remember, don't share cancer stories up front. Don't ask for updates when you see the person. And this one, when you see a person in public, this is something we say, and these are all natural things we say. When you see someone, we say, how are you? And we are just opening the conversation. We're not necessarily wanting an honest paragraph review of how you are. And the problem with this is if I have cancer and I go out in public, and let's just say I go to a local gathering, and I'm there, and people come up and say, how are you? I'm an honest person. I don't know how to answer you. It feels like if I say fine and I'm not fine, that I'm
not
lying.
Being truthful.
I'm lying. And this is something all of us, do I share the story? Don't I share the story? Are they going to be upset with me if I say fine and I'm not? A better way to greet someone is to say, how nice to see you, to open the conversations. Or if they haven't been at a certain event and they suddenly are there, say, so nice to see you. I've missed you. So we have to change how we greet people.
I'm so appreciate your suggestion, because that's somebody, before they even think about it, they're going to say, how are you? And you give an alternate, a better way of greeting somebody.
But I have to admit, now that I'm not fighting cancer every day, and I've gone back to the old Linda way of being, I make these same mistakes. I make the same mistakes of out of my mouth quickly wants to come, how are you? And then I grab myself, or I tried to grab and said, Linda, how did you write that book and you still make this mistake? So I want to give us all a get out of jail free card. If we learn to modify, it makes it easier for the person, but we're not going to be perfect.
Your next guideline, do greet them by saying, it's so nice to see you, or I've missed you, just
yes.
As you said. I wanted to reiterate that so that they might catch themselves before they say, how are you? So nice to see you. Next guideline, at social gatherings, include them in normal conversation about the event that you're attending. You're talking about the concert.
Exactly. I mean, this is something that people say, well, what do I say if I don't talk about their cancer?
Mm-hmm.
If they've not been to a neighborhood gathering and suddenly they are, say, oh, we've missed you. Would you like me to catch you up, you know, on what's happened, you know, or whatever?
Yeah. And then don't approach strangers in public settings to talk about their presumed cancer.
Oh, this is such a hard one. as I lost all my hair.
That's a sign right there. That's the one that's most visible.
And I'm wearing the cap on my head that has no hair showing anywhere. It's even called a cancer hat, and sometimes I wouldn't wear it. It's complete strangers. I go to the grocery store. It's taking all my energy to leave my house and go grocery shopping, but I need to. And I need a break from just sitting. I'm bored at home. And so I'm out grocery shopping, and I'm thinking about what to buy and what to do. And somebody comes up and says, oh, I know what you're going through. Don't worry. Your hair will come back. Or somebody comes up. And I think every pregnant woman knows this problem. And they share their peace with them. And suddenly, I'm back in the world of cancer that I had escaped for a moment. Now, there's a second part to the story. After I went through and had hair again, and I'm now not diagnosed as active cancer.
That's what I'm saying. Anybody looking at you would never know.
And I went to a concert at CSU, and we're waiting for them to open up the auditorium. And as I'm looking at the people there in the crowd, I see a woman with a cancer hat on. Oh, my heart just opened up, and I wanted so badly to go and do exactly that which I
what
said.
What you said, don't do.
And I'm sitting there, and I'm literally grabbing myself at the back of my collar saying, no, you can't go over, because I realize my sharing with her is related to me. And I looked at her, and I said, she's with her husband. She's having normal conversations. She's fitting in. She's excited to be going to a concert. And you're going to bring her back into a world of cancer. So, again, I say to people.
So you caught yourself before you did
that. I caught myself, did not do it. But I sat there watching how hard it was for me to do the advice that I give others in this book. So, again, I want to say being aware is our first stage of learning.
Well, I think your book is so helpful on so many levels, Linda. And I think people would want to have a copy, even if they don't, at the present, right now, have a friend or family member or themselves. But I think to have this on hand and to review it, let me tell people again, the title of your book, Cancer Inside Out, An Insider's View of Chemo and Outsider's Guide for Support. The author is Linda Krill. And is there anything else you'd like to add before
Well, I was going to say, I wrote this primarily for all of us that want to support them. I have been shocked by how many people going through cancer want this book as well, because it validates a lot of the feelings they had, and it teaches them how to talk to others and say, here are some ways that you could change what you're doing.
Thank you. Again, my guest was Linda Krill, the title of her book, Cancer Inside Out. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you.
And next, we have a segment we call The Writer's Room, and it features writers from around the North State.
Paths. In the knee-high grass of winter, I follow a beating down of green out to the spaded quadrant we'll plant when the frost has left us. Something breeds a satisfaction in this walk, a familiar shape of feet, laying the shafts over in rosettes of green on the black mud beneath. I know who walks here, who carries matter to the composter, gardening tools to the worked earth, hope to a string line and the open furrow. The path is sudden born of new labor that is old and essential to us all. No distractions ambush our caravans heading toward the oasis of food work. This is childlike, finding odd joy in the snaking definition of a path that winds from the end of the yard to an idea shaped in common ground. Philip Hemingway.
This is called Homo sapiens. Ho, ho, mo, homo. Homo sapiens, an equal blend of flesh and bones, spirit and emotions, of intellect, our so-called intelligence, a marriage that is truly till death do they part, the spirit continuing on its eternal quest towards perfection, while the body decays, turning back into the dust from which it came. Homo sapiens, with our eyes we see, but is it illusions that we see? Do the images that our eyes see tell us what our thoughts should be, even before we know the truth about what we're looking at? And if If we are all truly different one from the other, then tell me, why does all blood bleed red? Illusions. Illusions move us to believe that some are more while others are less, the deciding factor being money and material objects that sparkle and glitter. Yes, it is through their eyes that many are sold, respecting only those whose hands are filled with gold and silver and whose minds are filled with shallow, lustful fantasies. Homo sapiens, you see, in reality, the naked man has only his mind to offer. He has only the strength of his arms and legs, his feet and hands. He has only the logic of his thoughts. He has only the passion of his heart, compelling him in the direction he chooses to go. Homo sapiens, the children of creation, the dreamers of dreams, the creators and destroyers of dynasties, those possessing the ability to manifest any thought form fantasy into physical reality using time as a measuring stick towards greatness, Homo sapiens, those possessing the freedom of choice to move forward into perfection, sideways into stagnation, or backwards into stupidity, self-defeat, and inevitably extinction. Homo sapiens, you and I, Michelle Dalton.
For more information on the writers you've just heard, go to mynspr.org and click on the poetry link.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf, a production of North State Public Radio. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org.